Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Umrepreneur podcast. As usual, my goal is to bring you guys interesting and amazing guests to talk about business, lifestyle, mindset, and entrepreneurship from an Islamic perspective. And today I have with me Sister Dunya Bakri Bazi, who is actually the CEO of At Law Group, which is an eight-figure law firm, mashallah. And she's right now also delving into coaching and helping Muslim women and Muslim women entrepreneurs specifically really have the right mindset, the right approach, the right tools to build and scale their businesses successfully. And most importantly, have the right support system to have a network of other Muslim women with them along the way. So Dunya, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Welcome. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself for the listeners who might not be familiar with you?
Sure. My name is Dunya. I'm a lawyer. It's what I do. I'm also an entrepreneur at heart. So we really build our law firm like a business, not just looking at it from the legal perspective, but also looking at it from a business perspective. And honestly, I've had a lot of success, thankfully, to Allah first and foremost and hard work second. And just want to share kind of what I've learned through this journey with as many people as I can, and specifically Muslim women entrepreneurs, as I feel like they don't have a good community of individuals who are supporting them. So kind of looking at this phase of my life to be able to pour back into that community, I think is really cool and That's meaningful amazing. For me.
MashaAllah. So let me ask you this. Why pour back into the Muslim community? A lot of people, once they have success, they just want to kind of, move on to the next thing and kind of continue scaling it up. But you're making a decision where we were even talking before this episode and you said, well, alhamdulillah, I had some great success with my law firm and I now want to see how I can give back to other Muslim entrepreneurs and make them feel that it's possible for them as well to succeed. Why? Why is that desire there within you?
I truly didn't want the responsibility. I'm going to be honest with you. For about like 4 or 5 years, I've been thinking about this because, I went through so many challenges and was able to overcome them. And I kind of waited for somebody else to create a platform for Muslim women to be able to come to grow together. Mm-hmm. And every time I would see an individual who I would pinpoint as, wow, they're climbing up this ladder or they're super successful within their career, all of a sudden, they start slowly losing their value set. Mm. And I just kept seeing that over and over and over. And I said, like, maybe I have to. Mm. I'm going to be honest. Like, I didn't really want that responsibility. But now I feel like I felt like an overwhelming sense of it over the last year, which is like, I have to do this because now I know truly I can add the value to this community. It's definitely needed. I did a podcast maybe over 3 months ago. I was just kind of talking from the heart about the hijab and how it opened up so many doors for me and how I hate that people look at it as a barrier instead of looking at it as like an opportunity, like to grow within your faith and your professional career and all of it. And the feedback that I got was, I did not expect it. And then that kind of solidified it for me. Like, I need to do this. Like, Allah's giving me a sign that maybe this is the path I need to take. So I think it's so important to have religion as the foundation to anything that you do, and then build off of it. My partner, Jalal Mughniyeh, has a 5-vertical framework that he talks about, which is like religion at the foundation, but you still need your social, intellectual, financial, spiritual, means of living. All of those things are important, but make religion the foundation. That's why I gravitate towards you and your content and kind of what you're talking about, because through the teachings of Islam, we really do have the playbook. Just build off of it, so.
SubhanAllah. Yeah, no, definitely. Thank you for sharing. And let me ask you this, because, when someone looks at another individual, especially another in this scenario, Muslim hijabi woman that has essentially achieved a certain level of success. And I talk about material success. So mashallah, with your business doing as well as it is now, that makes them feel like, as you mentioned earlier, it is possible. Like, if someone else is doing it and that person looks like me, then maybe I can do it too, right? It's one thing to see someone else achieving a milestone that might not be part of your community or might look different than you. But when you see someone that looks like you, that has the same values, that goes on to achieve an amazing milestone. It makes you believe that you can do it. So let me ask you this for you, Dania, because for people like yourself, and even for me, for the initial few years of my entrepreneurial journey, there weren't really, like, there wasn't really such a thing as Muslim entrepreneurs. It wasn't really a thing. So who were you pulling inspiration from, and how did you keep going in the moments where you felt like you wanted to give up and like maybe you weren't meant to do this because it was so hard?
So obviously there's so many people in my life who I pull inspirations from. Like, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and we should never forget that. My grandfather actually passed away 8 years to the date today. And he was one of the first people in my life that instilled in me the importance of like education. You know, they called me the Mohammed in the family, the attorney in the family, since I was 6 years old. So he was a huge like supporter in my life. And when he passed, it was really a struggle because like the firm was just starting, you know, so he never got to see this. And I know he would be so proud. But actually, a couple years ago, I would say 2 years ago, I found a group, a mastermind that I'm currently in. It's not a Muslim group, okay? Russell Brunson is probably one of the best digital marketers in the world. I'm in his mastermind. And I went to Funnel Hacking Live, which is kind of like his big summit. And what I noticed is every single speaker on the stage talked about my calling, the awakening, their religious framework, although it wasn't Islam, but their religious framework was at the forefront of everything they did. And these are people who I generally gravitated towards, just kind of like in their teachings, what they're teaching you about business, but like how they approach things. There's a lot of people that we look at online and say, oh, this person reached this level of success and whatnot. But seeing, like, I think there were like 30 combined speakers, each one of them having religion at the foundation of what they were talking about, I looked and I said, why don't we have more of this from like Muslims? Why do we shy away from it? And I think it's because there was like, I don't know, I think there was like this culture of put it on the back burner, like be professional, make it in your career, do all of these things, assimilate, whatever that culture was that was kind of embedded. And it was like, keep religion in the background, be a Muslim, but keep in the background, you know, instead of bringing it at the forefront. And when I saw that, I have goosebumps thinking about it right now, because I just was like, we need more of this. Well, like, we need more of this. Why can they do it and we can't? We can. I think we're our own worst enemies, to be honest. So then that's why I was like, we need to start establishing this as something that is, it's right. It's good to do. Not I'm going to do it in spite of or whatnot. So kind of changing that mindset mentality, I think. So. Mm-hmm.
You know, mindset is a really important part about success in business. And I'm sure you know this more than I do, given the many years that you've spent building your law firm. So let me ask you this: for Muslim women entrepreneurs, or even Muslim entrepreneurs in general, that are kind of thinking of going down the path, what have you found to be some principles that you've discovered throughout your journey that have been very important to help you get the success that you have today and potentially, you know, and it's funny, you mentioned FHL, quick side note, I was there. And what's interesting is, I think I remember seeing you go and getting your award on the stage and being really? Like, oh, another Muslim, that's awesome. Yes, I think I do. And it's crazy that we're talking now, because I didn't, at the time we didn't talk, I didn't know you. So it's really interesting, subhanAllah, how we're finally connecting now. But I do remember, I think there was yourself and there was maybe even... at least one or two other hijabi sisters who were up on that stage, which was really cool for me to see. And I was like, man, we need FHL, like the halal version. We need the Muslim version, 100%.
We'll do it together.
100%. We have to, inshallah. But what are some principles that you felt like enabled you to get to the point where you did receive the award on that stage? What are some principles that you followed in your business that for you were the ones that moved the needle?
That's a good question because there's so many different things. So I think first is just creating that core value framework. You know, what is so many people talk about it, but nobody really does it within their business. I talk to people that are crazy successful and I ask them what their core values of their business are and they can't tell me, or they're just so generic. We like dove really deep on like, what are our core values? What do we care about? Which leads us to what people are we surrounding ourselves with within our company? What clients are we taking? I think that's one of the things. So ours are Beast, Gem, Dog, Champ. The beast is the person who is going to never quit. Like there, you reach a goal, there's always another one. So you're always going to the next level. There's never going to be an end to it. The gem is innate human goodness. So that goes back to like your moral beliefs. Like you always want to leave a room and never worry that the person in the other room is going to like stab you in the back because everyone around you is just good, innate human goodness. And then the dog is the person that's just going to get the work done. So you're never going to leave your list undone. So if I have things that need to get done, I'm going to stay up until dawn to get them done, or I'm going to wake up really early to make sure that they're done before the day starts. You're never going to leave anything on your plate that's not done. And then the champ is the person who is going to uplift everyone around them while they're growing. Mm-hmm. So not so much you're going to uplift everyone around you, but tear yourself down or bring yourself down, because if you're a giver, you tend sometimes to do that. You bring yourself down so somebody else feels better about themselves. That's not what we want. We want you to grow, but we want you to bring everyone else with you and uplift them. So I think when we got real serious about our core values, that was a huge turning point for us. I also think that learning from people who have been there before, where do you want to go? Where do you want to be in 10 years? Look at that person who's already there and follow their framework. You don't have to innovate. Why would you? You know, I fell on my face so many times. I can't tell you how many times. And it's simply because I really didn't have anybody in my space who I can look to or who would offer me the opportunity to learn from. And that's kind of why I'm so passionate about teaching and sharing and just giving, because nobody gave me the same opportunity I felt throughout my like beginning part of my career. So that would be the second piece of it. And then I think the third piece was like, create depth, not width. So really niche down and create extreme depth into what you're doing. You'll get easily distracted by a crazy amount of opportunities, especially when you're a good entrepreneur. Like when you're a good entrepreneur, you are able to see the opportunities in front of you. And like my eyes light up because like I just said that and I looked out my windows and I just saw a crazy ton of opportunities. But being disciplined enough to know like it's not the time for this right now. Like I need to build depth within what I'm doing. And then if this leads to this, then we'll move on. But once I've created depth or created the team to be able to handle it. So one thing that I love to do is I love to get experts in the field and then build teams around them, because then it creates depth in different verticals. So I can grow width wise, but I'm not losing the depth. Mm.
You know? That's a really interesting concept. I want to dive deeper into that. So, you know, the concept of niching down, I think it's one thing that, and you mentioned like entrepreneurs, you know, they've kind of fall prey to this as well, because as you mentioned, like when entrepreneurs are naturally, like we are naturally opportunity seekers, right? Like we are looking for opportunities in every little thing, and we want to discover like what could there be in that opportunity for me. And we're really excited. We're builders. We're excited about building things. And it's much harder to be excited about. There's kind of three phases in business. So there's the initial startup phase where everything is super cool and exciting and you're kind of coming up with ideas. And, you know, it's kind of like that foundational approach. And I personally love it. It's my favorite phase of business. But then there's the phase called doing the work, which is probably 90% of the journey. So like you have 5% is, you know, the fun stuff. It's like actually like thinking about what your business is going to be about and like coming up with a business plan. I personally love that part. But then you have 90%, which is like doing the work, which is like, am I just going to wake up every day and do the things that I want to do and the things that I don't want to do, but I know I have to do in the business, right? And then ultimately at the end, it's kind of like that scaling part, which is like the last 5%. But my question to you is, usually in the initial part, when we're mapping out the business plan, there's no risk in there for falling prey to shiny object syndrome. But then when you're in that kind of, I'm going to call it that trough in the middle, right, where you're just doing the work and it becomes monotone, then you might start to seek excitement by continuing to add, the word that I'm looking for is not random, but continuing to add unknown opportunities, or, you know, new opportunities that, and discover like what this might look like. You want to add, this word that I'm escaping me right now, but something interesting, right? Like you want to add novelty. There you go. Like novelty to the experience. So in that stage, because I've fallen prey to this, like I've, man, my latest stint, like I spent $40K with a development agency, like building out an entire platform that we haven't yet launched, that's just been sitting on a shelf, because I'm like, I need a team to build this, but I don't have the time right now to put the team together and build this thing. So I know that's a very long-winded question that I'm asking you, but ultimately what I'm trying to ask you here is, for you, what has been your strategy to keep your eyes zeroed in on depth? And for you, what does depth even mean? Because it could mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people, right? So I want to know, for you, does that mean that you picked one offer and you just kind of stuck to it all the way to 7-8 figures? Does that mean that you picked one niche and just stuck to it? What does depth mean for you specifically?
So depth means a lot of things to me. I'll try to explain it in like a really systematic way. But so for example, I'm an attorney, right? I do personal injury. That's my expertise. And I do that because when I was passing the bar exam, I literally just got my results. My brother got into a really bad car accident. And I thought like to myself, like, how is this affecting my family? How it's affecting him, like the insurance company, the bureaucracy around all of it. And I said, there's a reason Allah put this event like in my life right at this moment while I'm choosing my career path, essentially. Okay. So I went into personal injury. Now, I have other areas of practice within my company. We do corporate law. We do real estate. I love helping entrepreneurs, but I don't necessarily do that work, right? So we're building teams for that. So if you find the expert and you're able to build a team, they create the depth. Okay. But like in PI itself, there is so much that goes on. You said 90%. I agree with you. It is literally 90% of the journey. My partner once told me, Abu Dhar, he said, if you can't enjoy the journey and all you enjoy is like the reward on the back end, you're literally going to be miserable in your life. So you need to like enjoy every part of the journey, and like argue with kids as well. You know, it's hard in the beginning when they're young, but like, if you don't stop to enjoy these moments, they're not going to come back, you know? But within the practice itself, there's so many things you can do. You can build pipelines. I call them pipelines, which are basically like funnels to bring in clients. Mm-hmm. Each pipeline is building something new, mm-hmm. but you're building it within your one niche. You're building depth within your core business. So like, I love building pipelines. So like, I'll build one and then I'll build five and then I'll build seven. So I'm constantly building something. On the technology side, I'm constantly building in new automations within the practice to make my clients better served, to make my attorneys better served, and hopefully be able to share that with the world one day once it's like all fulfilled. Because I think one of the biggest problems, and as entrepreneurs, that's what we do. We solve problems, right? Mm-hmm. Within your core business, there are hundreds of problems, hundreds. You just got to be able to stay focused on your core business and building depth within it to solve those problems. So at the end of the journey, you have like literally resolved everything within that framework mm-hmm. of that business, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at it like that, like I'm constantly building because I'm like that. You constantly have to be building. You constantly have to be moving. You constantly have to be taking action on something else, right? That's what makes us entrepreneurs and why we're the 1% crazy in the world is because of this reason. But build within the thing that you're working on, like be purpose-driven within building. And if you're very clear on your end goal within your core business, this becomes a lot easier. So a lot of times people don't spend the time, entrepreneurs don't spend the time getting extremely clear on what their end goal is. If they knew it, then they would be building towards it and make the goal so big that you might not be able to accomplish it in your lifetime. Because if that's the case, you're always going to be building. Yeah, it's never going to stop. And hopefully you get there. But if you don't, hopefully your kids get there or your kids' get there, you know?
Inshallah. Yeah, I mean, is there really an end goal in entrepreneurship, man? Because I don't know. I mean, for me, I've always thought there was, and then like we're wired to hit milestones, so one after the other. It's just the way we operate. But at the same time, like for me in my own personal journey, for example, one thing that I've had trouble really figuring out is what is the ideal balance between grind mode and like actually making time for work-life balance, or as you mentioned, enjoying those moments, or potentially like approaching it in a way where I know there's this mountain of work that needs to be done. I'm excited to get it done, but I know that if I continue to do that day after day after day, I'm going to get to a point where I burn out. And that's happened to me a lot, actually. So I'm curious if you found like a cadence or pace that works for you, or if you can even tell, not even just the listeners, but you can tell the workaholic in me that it's okay if you're not working like 12-hour days every day. Like, I want to know what your approach is.
I'm a really bad person to ask that question of, but I can tell you there are two things that have worked really well for me. One, when you are able to truly, they talk about this, like kill the hustler, right? You're never going to kill the hustler. You're just going to hustle differently. So when you are really able to take yourself from the person who is grinding and doing the actual work within your business and go up a notch to be either like the CEO or the vision, like you are the visionary, but sometimes you're like the visionary and the integrator and the doer and the everything. When you're able to kind of take yourself and go to the next level where I create the team, they're doing the work. I'm the visionary. I'm either, you know, you're probably going to go in management role and then go, then you got to kill the manager. Then you got to go to kind of the CEO role. You buy back your time. You truly, truly do, because you're not in the grind of the day to day. You're in the grind of the mental. Where are we going? What's the best opportunity? What do I see in front of me? You know, and it's very different. So I work a lot. I still work a lot, but I love what I do, but I'm working much differently. So like I'm at every basketball game for my kids. They're 8 and 7, and you know, they're like in the middle of the day from 11 to 1, like best time, right? So, but I'm there every single time, and it's cool because I'm able to do that. But if I was Dunya of 4 years ago, there's no way I would have been able to leave my office for 2 hours during the day to go there. And I think that was a big thing. And then I would say the second thing is you said work-life balance, and I would adjust it just a little bit. And I call it work-life integration. So it's not a work-life balance. What does that mean? My life is my work and my work is my life, right? Like I couldn't wrap my head around that concept. So like me and my husband are really big on like work-life integration. So if we're doing something, we're involving our kids. So like I have a big problem at work. I go and I talk to my kids about it. I'm like, here's what happened. And honestly, 99% of the time they have the answer. Cause you know, they're shooting straight, no emotion, nothing. They're like, oh, then you just got to do this. Like dumb, you know? And then they put me in check. They also have their own company called Live Fun. We love building companies. So like my kids have their own company. It's an event-based company for parents and kids to be able to enjoy and have fun and learn together. Okay.
Amazing.
So now it's so cool. So like, instead of spending our time on like other things that like for me were really hard at one point. So my husband was in corporate America first. When we used to go on vacations, you might feel this way, I don't know. But when we used to go on vacations, I used to like have a really hard time. Mm-hmm. If my laptop was not on my lap while they were in the pool and I was doing something, I really struggled. Like I was like, I felt like it was wasting time. Although I hate to say it like that's not wasting time when you're with your family, but you know, like your mind is like, it's working differently. Mm-hmm. So minor adjustments, like I listen to Audible now. Like I'll listen to a book while I'm playing with my kids in the pool. or something, if you know what I mean, if we're on vacation or I need to keep my mind busy. So like tiny adjustments where you're not taking away from your children or from your life or from your friends or social life, you're integrating them. And sometimes your circles don't get it. And then you need to adjust your circles, you know? And that's kind of like probably another topic that we can talk about, but it's a hard part. But I definitely feel like those are the two things. Once you're able to like kill the worker bee hustler and move into kind of like the CEO mode, the visionary mode, and just truly focus on that, you buy back your time. And then the second piece is work-life integration. Yeah.
100%. Those were some gems right there. Thank you so much for sharing that, Dunya. So let me ask you this, and this is going to be a bit of a different style of question. We had a conversation earlier, and you mentioned that you were interested in potentially, you know, having a conversation with me on the podcast and helping Muslim women entrepreneurs, and it's something that you're already working on. So let me ask you this: what is it that you want them to hear? Right? If you could say anything you wanted to on this podcast, and you know that they were going to listen, what would you want them to know?
That you can do it, you know, that you can do it and just think bigger.
Why do you want them to know that? Why do you want them to know that they can do it? Is it because you've met a lot of people who the reason why they haven't moved forward is just because the belief is not there?
Yeah. And the belief is coming from different reasons, but I can't tell you in one day how many people tell me, I don't know how you do it all. I don't know how you have any time. I don't know how you, and I'm like, I don't feel strapped for time. I don't feel like I'm drowning in my work. I don't feel like I don't get enough time with my kids. Like I know I'm spending that time with them. I know. So I'm like, I must be doing something that's challenging for everyone else, or that they believe is challenging because everyone's been telling them it's so challenging. I talked to a 17-year-old girl yesterday at the mosque, and she was telling me that she wants to be a doctor and she wants to do all of these things. But then she goes back to, but I don't think I can have a family at the same time. I'm like, why would you say that? You know, she's like, everyone told me that. Like, there's no way I can take this career path and do that. I'm like, you have a right to choose like what you want to do. And then just, you know, you have to create boundaries for yourself. Within your work or whatever it is. It might not be exactly what you want. There are sacrifices you have to make in life, but there's a good medium, you know? And and it wasn't always this easy. It's not easy. Like every part of the journey, there's struggles and challenges. But if you talk to me 5 years ago, I was a different person. If you talk to me 10 years ago, I was a different person. And if you talk to me a month ago, I was a different person. So whenever people tell me, oh, you've changed, I'm like, I have, and I hope I have. I hope I'm constantly growing and improving and getting better. And I just want to if I can buy somebody a decade of their life by telling them, don't fall on your face here, here, and here. Definitely don't do this. I want to do that because I'm literally giving you back the one thing in life that you could never get back. There's no way. That's the one thing. You can never gain back time. If I can literally offer that one service, like, I don't know. I feel like it would be impactful.
Why not just go and retire on a beach somewhere, Dunya?
What's the fun in that?
I mean, isn't it? Because let me ask you this. Okay, let me ask you this, Danielle. Let's be real, right? When we're running, like, let's say you're going out to put out a marketing funnel, right? BizOp, right? We're talking BizOp. The biggest desire that I've received from, I've done over, I think, 500 sales calls, and you know, we have hundreds of survey submissions and forms and whatever. One of the biggest desires that people mention that they want out of building a business is, oh, I want to have like more time, and I want to have like, you know, more freedom. And that's generally, you know, what you see, like, right, in the BizOp space, like, people, that's what they want. But then when you talk to entrepreneurs, when I'm talking to you, when I'm talking to everyone else, it's, no one mentions, like, yeah, you know what, the best part about this is, like, I get to retire on a beach somewhere. Why? What is that change that happens when you actually become an entrepreneur that makes you feel like it's not about the freedom or, like, let's say, just lounging around? So what is it about really then? Why are you doing this? I know I'm asking like difficult questions, but trust me, these are important questions that I know my audience is thinking.
You triggered so many like thoughts right now. I, you know, if that's your end goal, like if you know that's your end goal, I want to go end up on a beach somewhere. Why haven't you done it yet? Because it's so simple. Literally just live below your means, go somewhere that's really hot, live on the beach. I see people living in their car on a beach all the time. Like that, you always want something that's opposite of what you have. That's what I've noticed. And I'm like, you don't really want that, because if you wanted that, then why are you working all your life just to get that when you can go get it right now? Right? Like
100%.
If that's what you really wanted. And if that is truly what you really want, listening to the podcast, go do it right now. Like you don't need a lot to live like that, right? It's beautiful to see people who are completely content living on the ocean, doing their thing because that's what they want, you know, and they're not seeking anything out. They're content with it. Cool. That's all you, you know. For entrepreneurs, true entrepreneurs, and I think the term entrepreneur has been diluted in value over the last year, 2 years, I think, on especially like on social. I say, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm going to go start my own business. I'm going to be an entrepreneur. But you're not.
Yeah, the BizOps space has gone like very cancerous recently. But yeah.
You're not going to put in the time. You're talking about working 12 hours. I'm talking about working 12 hours. Like, if you're not going to do that, you're not an entrepreneur. If you're not looking to solve problems and create an impact, you're not an entrepreneur. And there's nothing wrong with not being an entrepreneur, by the way. There is a reason why probably only a small subsection of people should be entrepreneurs. If we were all entrepreneurs, this world would be a little crazy.
100%.
No, but I think for me, service is freedom. Everyone serves in a different way. Everyone has a path that they take and a journey that like Allah has paved the way for them to serve. For me, this is my service, serving catastrophically injured people in car accidents. And now kind of pivoting that to taking everything that I learned from this and being able to share it with other entrepreneurs, because I think I've reached a certain level where I could add that value in. And then I want value being poured back into me so I can pour it back into my catastrophically injured clients and help serve them. So see kind of how it, like, you have to integrate. You're building, but you're integrating. For me, that's it. Like, how much impact can I make? How much impact can this company make? How much impact can my inner circles make? And I don't even know what that means. Like, I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't even know yet what that means. I know that's my desire, but when am I going to feel like we did enough? I don't think I will feel it. So that driving force is going to constantly drive me, which is why I will probably never retire. And, you know, I don't know if that answered your question.
It did. I appreciate you. I just wanted some insight into how your brain works. So I'm being very, very invasive in this podcast. So, all right. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. When you're mentioning that, it's interesting. That last part really stood out to me because I think I relate to that 100%. The last part of like, I don't know what that means, and I don't know like what the end point looks like. And it's interesting. Do you feel like you were always, even growing up, like, do you feel like you were always seeking something? Does it feel like you were always in search of something? Does always. That make sense?
Always.
Okay. Do you feel sense. Like you found it?
No.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Like, yeah. It's what keeps us up at night. And they say, what keeps you up at night? Yeah.
SubhanAllah. It's like this thing that like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts in your heart, and it's hard to explain, you know. Some people say, like, Ed Milet is famous for always saying, like, in all of his speeches, he's like, for me, like, what drives me is potentially when I pass away, you know, meeting kind of like that other version of myself that actually did pursue, you know, their dreams, that, you know, did everything that, you know, it wanted to do. And essentially that's kind of like the best version. It's like, that's what I could have been, right? Mm-hmm. If I actually like put in the work and push myself. And I think for me, a big part of it is that thought of, is there another version of me out there? Not realistically, but as in, could there be another version of me that is maybe further along, that has accomplished more than what I'm right now accomplishing? And a lot of times in entrepreneurship, I think we end up realizing that the only person we're actually competing with is ourselves, right? It's not really anyone else. It's the thrill of competition, but more importantly, the thrill of competition with yourself and seeing how far you can go.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny that like when you meet people that are like-minded, how it just feels right, because like you actually get me, but most of the world doesn't. I used to play basketball. So I was a basketball player growing up, played college basketball, high school, like middle school. And I always used to remember saying like, I need to go take 1,000 shots. And then the next day I need to take 1,100 shots. And the next day, and it was just like me by myself on the court, like nobody else. And just that kind of that competitive drive within your own self to be better today than you were yesterday. And not focusing too much on, you know, man, I made all these mistakes. I don't even use that word. I like eliminate it from my vocabulary. But like we do so many things that we would have done differently had we known, but we only know because we've done them, or we walked that path, or we learned from somebody else. Yeah, I don't know. I'll let you know once I figure it out, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, send me a post-it note. I'll put an edit to the podcast description. We found the answer. I know we're going a little bit over time. I'm going to ask you one final question here that is going to, I think, wrap up this conversation beautifully, inshallah. And this is for anyone that listens that might relate to what we're talking about, that might relate to like that drive within them, the pursuit that they have within them, that they feel like they want to just, you know, build something, make an impact, achieve more, inshallah. How do you deal with sometimes the feeling that creeps in, being an individual that is like this, that I'm not where I want to be? And so that self kind of criticism voice then creeps in and you're like, well, am I actually a failure? And am I actually not what I hype myself up to be, right? That kind of evil, almost like this satanic waswas, right, in our mind, right, that we know comes from shaitan, where it's kind of like, you're not good enough. You know, you could have been doing more, you could have been achieving more. And all that negative self-talk that tends to creep up. And I think that keeps so many people from actually, you know, pursuing their goals and actually actualizing the life that they want.
That's a great question. So everyone fears something. I used to say, oh, I don't fear. I don't have a fear of failure. I always used to say that. I don't have a fear of failure. And I used to think that was my superpower. I'll fall, I don't care, I'll get right back up. I'm gonna smash my face, a bloody nose, give me some napkins, I'm good. Right? I used to think that was my superpower. Then I realized I fear failure. Just my definition of failure is different than maybe most people. My definition of failure is not trying, not doing that next thing, not taking that next step, not taking action on something I know I learned or something I know I should have learned. So I think our mind is a very like powerful thing. And that's the only thing, if you can protect one thing, and my husband will argue your body because he's like a health nut and I'm going to print. So the combination, protect your mind with everything that you have. So I literally brainwash myself sometimes in believing what I want to believe. It could be completely not true.
What does that look like? Tell me your, let's dive into the secret rituals real quick.
I've been trying to figure out a framework for it. Let me give you an example that's outside of, completely outside of business or anything. You know how you get married and like you have your in-laws, right? And you might have in the beginning, like a spat, like, oh, this is not going to work. Or I'm just going to kind of like distance them from my life. You have two options at that point. You distance them from your life, or you brainwash yourself to believe at that moment, like, these people are exactly like my parents, exactly like my family. Like, when they're saying something, not to take it in a way that's going to be like, rub me the wrong way. I'm going to take it as though they are exactly like the people that I grew up with my whole life. And you do that to yourself. And then you, whatever's given to you, you're taking it differently. You're ingesting it differently. Your mind is reading it differently. So then you see it as value or constructive criticism, not just shots, you know?
Right.
Same thing in business. Like, I took so many like hits that people are like, how did you even overcome that? I'm like, Allah just gave me that lesson because he wants me to be better. And the only way for me to be better is to have gone through this experience or to take this hit. Like, I wouldn't have learned it otherwise. I don't know. I've been thinking about this. That's so funny that you asked that question. I'm like, there has to be a framework to this because I'll think of it. But it's more like just be mentally strong. Like, tawakkal. Tawakkal ala Allah.
Tawakkal ala Allah. 100%. Yeah, definitely. I was hoping you were going to give me like some secret, like every morning I read these like few sentences and I brainwash myself and then I go in the mirror and I say, you're a great person. So you don't do any of that? You don't do the self-talk?
But I don't allow like negativity. I eliminate negativity from my life as much as possible. So I'm a very positive person generally. If I take like all the personality tests, I'm on the positive spectrum, like, it comes with something. I don't allow negativity in my life. Like, a negative energy is so powerful. Like, I don't think people understand the power of negative energy, but you have the power to control that negative energy. Do you let it in? My social media, like scrolling, is literally all positive reinforcement. If there's anything negative on it, it's gone. If there's any triggers, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, sure. So you can control a lot if you allow yourself to. It's simple in concept, mm-hmm. Tough in actual reality, but you can.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, it's inputs and outputs. So garbage in, garbage out, pretty much. So you have to be careful what you're ingesting. Dunya, is there anything that you want to share, inshallah, that I haven't asked you, or any kind of, you know, final words you wanna tell the audience, inshallah, as we wrap up this episode?
Honestly, like, just thank you so much for what you're doing. You are impacting the world in such a positive way.
Thank you.
I'm so thankful for you to have done this and created this platform, and I'm so excited to see your growth, inshallah.
And inshallah, thank you very much.
And if anybody ever needs anything, like, I'm completely available. So if anybody wants to reach out to me, I'm here to serve.
Yeah, what's the best way? Is there anything that you're working on? Anything that you're preparing that we can share with our audience, whether it's like a masterclass, any type of like webinar, or even just like some type of link that you can share for our audience if they want to get a bit more value from you, inshallah?
Sure. So I am offering a Muslim Woman Entrepreneurship Mastermind, which is going to be a year-long program, hopefully building a community of Muslim women who are amazing and powerful and be able to pour into one another. And through that, I'll have like webinars and masterclasses that are offered through it. I do offer some master classes as well. So if anybody wants to just follow me on Instagram, I always post there what kind of the next offering is going to be.
Okay, amazing. So we'll make sure to link your Instagram in the comments. If you're listening, check the episode notes. But if I recall correctly, it's at Dunya Bazzi. Dunya is written D-E-W-N-Y-A. Bazzi, B-A-Z-Z-I. That's your handle, correct? Beautiful. Okay, so we'll make sure to include that in the episode notes. If you're listening, check out the episode notes and make sure to follow Dunya on Instagram and keep up to date with everything she's doing, mashallah. I can tell you, I was her at FHL. She was up on that stage. She got that Tukama Club Award, so it's someone you want to listen to. I wish I came up to you and said salam at that point. But at least we got to meet right now, alhamdulillah. And of course, if you are watching, check the description on YouTube. You'll have the links there as well. Dunya, thank you so much for joining me. First, you know, sharing so generously your time. I know that time is the most precious resource for all of us as entrepreneurs. So the fact that you chose to spend this hour with me today, I'm super grateful for. So thank you so much, Dunya. And hopefully we'll get to have another conversation soon, inshallah.
Thank you, inshallah.
All right. Take care. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.